Oh, Christmas tree. Oh, Christmas tree.
Welcome to Level with Emily Rees. This is music by Oleksa Lazauchuk for Dead Rising 4. Oleksa's been writing music for that series since 2010's Dead Rising Case Zero. More from him in just a moment. First, we had some posting issues with the last two episodes. That's been fixed, and thanks for all the feedback about what was going on. Turns out it was totally my fault. Fixed it. Second, we have a hang coming up with Disaster Piece this month. It's December now. Stay tuned for details, and remember, we use Discord now, or at least for this next one we'll try it out, and you can either download that or just use it in a browser. We'll post details about that soon. Back to Dead Rising. The thing about this series, first of all, there's lots of humor in this series. It is a zombie game, and Oleksa often gets to write a lot of original songs, like this one from Dead Rising 3. By my estimation, there's about 1 million hours of music in this newest game, including straight orchestral stuff, country, Americana songs, Christmas songs, radio commercials. The Christmas songs are there because it takes place over the holidays. Some things to go over first. There's a brief glossary of some terms he uses, and that's in the article you'll find at patreon.com/level. Things like prepared piano, tone row, extended techniques. If you know what those are, you're good. Otherwise, you might want to check out the terms at Patreon. Oleksa used so many live performers, including an orchestra in the Eastern European country of Georgia. Just so you aren't thinking peaches and southern tea when that place name comes up. In the coldest time of the year, it's the coldest time of the year. It's the coldest.
You know, we go back to Willamette, where the original Dead Rising took place, which is in the Midwest in a fictional city called Willamette in Colorado. It takes place in the original mall area, but there's a brand new mall that's built. You know, I came up with an overall vision for what I wanted in terms of the adaptive music system, which I look forward to sharing a bit more because that also was like awesome. But okay. It took place after Black Friday, so sort of on the cusp of Black Friday going into the holiday season and Christmas. And so we had that in order to bring the world to life, had to basically come up with tons and tons of music to kind of fill that void, to give kind of a tug on people's heartstrings for Christmas right away. But then also it's in the Midwest, so we also needed to be able to telegraph very quickly for people within 2 seconds, oh, right, I'm in the Midwest. I came up with a vision for what I wanted for the overall mishmash of the whole soundtrack as an experience. And the world music was a lot of fun because I knew, A, we had to focus on Christmas and we had to make sure that we had some classic country as well. And so, you know, I just started sort of through my network of different people that I had spoken to over the years and other artists that I wanted to work with, I just kind of started reaching out to people. So one of them was John Hassell, legendary trumpeter, jazz trumpeter, you know, worked with everybody from David Byrne and Brian Eno to Bjork. I mean, he's a legend, right? And so Reached out to him. Oddly enough, LinkedIn's been awesome for that because over the last, you know, 5 years, I've just had a chance to really meet all kinds of world-class musicians. And just conversations were like, hey, I loved this album or I love this track from this. And you just kind of stay in touch with people and you never know how those paths cross. Like, people have nothing to do with video game development. They just somehow, through this person, through this network, you kind of run across each other's paths. Another person, Dominic Davis and his wife, Rachel Davis, they're based out of Nashville. Same thing, LinkedIn. I had been in touch with Dominic because he works with Buddy Miller, another great kind of legendary producers in the States that I really enjoy. But he's also the bassist for Jack White, and he's based out of Nashville. And I knew we needed some, you know, a bit more of the Midwest, or at least some of Americana, to help sort of tell that part of the story and give us that flavor. So just same thing, start those conversations, and then, you know, sure enough, a year later, you're into production, you're like, oh, I should reach out to Dominic and then speak with him and his wife. And, you know, I'm like, hey, you know, I'd like you guys to do a couple of tracks for the soundtrack. You know, I'm thinking classic Patsy Cline, or I'm thinking this, you know, Johnny Cash, old style stuff. So those are kind of two examples of totally different worlds, you know, your Nashville sound, straight country picking kind of old style stuff that you can relate to.
I'm wild about you. I'm wild about you. Baby, if you want my loving, don't you know I'm wanting it too? If you want some kissing and fooling, I know that there's no fooling you.
And then John Hassell, experimental kind of jazz. Now, John was interesting because it's one of those things where somebody's voice is so, and their signature is so, it's inseparable, right? His way of playing and breathing and stuff is, it's just him. And so that was an interesting experience of actually getting him to work on Zombie Threat music. We had tons of songs, so I knew we needed to have Christmas in the game, and we couldn't afford, well, A, I didn't have a non-exclusive music licensing agreement at Capcom Vancouver yet, and so I had a real dilemma, like, how the heck do I bring this notion of classic Christmas to life without pretty much any rights to any post-public domain songs? So,
yes.
So basically, I just came up with a list of like, okay, well, what are the Christmas songs that we can leverage and re-envision? And I stayed away from sacred stuff just because I wanted to. Dead Rising franchise was really more about focusing on kind of the consumerism and the kind of that paradox between, like, in this case, the holiday kind of, you know, family festive feeling, but this Black Friday rush to like amass goods and whatnot.
Yeah.
Up on the house, no delay, no pause. Clatter the steeds of Santa Claus. Down through the chimney, loads of toys. Ho for the little ones, Christmas joys. Ho, 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 who wouldn't go?
I think there was half a dozen of the, you know, Jingle Bells and Deck the Halls and Up on a Housetop and stuff, but that were ones that were safe in the public domain. And then we created a bunch of variations of them in different styles of classic Christmas. And then the other ones, we went back and looked through different old scores, like pre-1923 scores of different songs that kind of had that, I wouldn't call it golden era, but it kind of felt like it kind of fit.
Snow, it makes you move fast. Glow, it makes your heart.
And then ended up working with, actually, I think a native of, I think he's in Minneapolis, Robert Elhai. He's one of the best sort of well-known orchestrators in Hollywood, but he works out of Minneapolis. He's done like everything from Pirates of the Caribbean to The Sixth Sense, and he's worked with Metallica. And his son played Dead Rising 2 or 3 and loved it. And sure enough, on LinkedIn, just said, hey, Robert, love your stuff. Would love to work together at some point. 2 years later, I'm like, huh, I need an orchestrator, but who's like a genius who, you know, help me bring some of these 30s, 40s, and 50s tunes to life. So I just reached out to him, and then sure enough, the opportunity came and we worked together. So we ended up, I would write different originals, we would rearrange some public domain songs, some classics, and then we had basically worked out with Elijah Day Paris. He's a guy from LA who's based out of the country of Georgia. He was trying to set up this remote orchestra kind of set up with, and kind of introducing the Eastern European country of Georgia and their musicians in Tbilisi to composers in the West or around the world who were trying to, mm-hmm. you know, write better demos or just have access to live musicians on projects that didn't have better budgets. And so we leveraged the opportunity essentially to get a jazz trio, get a string quartet, get string orchestras. Tbilisi Big Band played on it. I got singers. I got not a Johnny Cash, more like a Willie Nelson kind of sound alike. From Georgia, yeah. who sang in English, but so basically it was less about who did we get involved, but more about like orchestrating and coming up with like an overall sort of production of like, okay, well, we got the palette, we got the musicians, we got the recording studio, we got great orchestration. We have all these things. Now I have to put it all together as like one complete homogenous soundtrack that is palpable, interesting, relates to the game, and just as solid and fun to listen to on its own.
Way down upon the Suwannee River, far, far away, there's where my heart is turning ever, there's where the old folks stay.
It was crazy, actually, to be perfectly honest with you. It was like 6-7 days a week, 14 to 16 hour days for a month and a half during those sessions, because with the time you have to get up and you're recording at 4 a.m. and over Skype and with musicians and we weren't speaking in English. Elijah Day and I were speaking in English, but all the musicians didn't. So we were doing zombie threat music where I was getting the string orchestra. We had different arrangements. We'd like beef up the low end and the celli and the basses and the violas mm-hmm. to essentially do like these crazy extended technique kind of sessions where we could amass a bunch of content that we would put into our adaptive interactive music system. You know, we had done scored versions of stuff, but then in the end, because I'm a violinist myself, I was just like, this is just not working. So I pulled out the violin, all the musicians had their headphones on. I was on Skype and they put the mic to the Skype thing and I just played like, you know, whatever it was, like, you know, Moaning yep. Cats or whatever it was. I would play it. And then language wasn't a barrier at that point. They heard it and they're like, Basically, we would record tons and tons of material. And then that kind of became the musical DNA that I would give to the different composers that I would hire to do the additional music. So we had Traz Damji, he's been helping me on different DR titles before. Boris Zaitchow, you know, who we know, and Jamie Christofferson.
Yeah.
Stu Goldberg was another guy who had worked with me on Super DR3. He's worked with Mahavishnu Orchestra, like really stellar musician. And then the new guy, Kevin Doucette, he's the assistant to A.R. Rahman. Kind of a nice breadth of additional music composers that I just knew that I could hand off stuff to them, give them kind of the main themes, the main tone rows and stuff, and just let them go. And then I would kind of, as they would do stuff, I would add and we would work together. But it allowed me to focus on the Christmas and the Americana stuff.
Come to town the other night, I heard the noise, I saw the fight. The watching was a running round, trying old Dan Tucker's come to town. So get out of the way, get out of the way, get out of the way, old Dan Tucker, you're too late to come for supper.
So you heard the music portion, but besides that, we also did, I think there was 12 to 13 hours of musical content, including radio, and probably about 5 to 6 hours of it actually just music content. But I worked with another colleague who online had reached out to, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. His name is John Luongo, and he's a legendary DJ out of Boston. He's worked with everybody from Michael Jackson to Aerosmith to kind of you name it. And he was an actual DJ. I was like, you know, John, someday we're going to find the right project to work together where you can actually be a DJ. So what we ended up doing is to bring the world to life, we created a classic Christmas radio station called LUB 1060 AM. And he ended up being the live DJ who DJed the zombie outbreak of... So Black Friday happens. The outbreak happens at 6 a.m. the next morning. And he DJs us through Black Friday night when all the crazy people are in line at the mall, all the way through the night until the morning, until the outbreak and during the outbreak. And so you have literally 7 or 8 hours of live DJ stuff where he's DJing it. We've created like, I don't know, 100, 150 PSAs and commercials and stuff of different locations around the world, different branded stuff. And he's DJing this kind of fictitious narrative of an outbreak that takes place. Meanwhile, peppering in and making up names of like, you know, here is, he wouldn't say Henry Mancini, but he'd be like, and here is this guy and his orchestra singing, you know, Deck the Halls or whatever.
Do you slice?
Yes.
Do you dice?
Yes. Yes.
Do you season and flavor?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Then what you need is professional and quality kitchen supplies.
From this
And then we had a second radio station called WLD 530 AM, home of Willamette's Wild Country Radio, because you can't line dance to dubstep. Anyway, so that was that's the country radio station, which didn't have as much content as the Christmas stuff, but we needed it in order to kind of tell stories in Willamette of bake sales and all that kind of stuff. So I ended up actually being the DJ on that. I just pitched my voice down lower, and some of our writers wrote some interesting tidbits, and I just kind of riffed off that as well.
You're listening to WLD 530 AM, home of Willamette's Wild Country Radio, because you can't line dance to dubstep.
We literally had this awesome bansuri player from India called, his name is Anubodh. So there was, Traz was working on like a piece for Chakra Flex Yoga, which is this yoga location in the world. And typically you would load up a patch with stuff and be done with it. But we're like, no, we got to make it legit. And so we got an actual bansuri player from India that he knew through his connections. And we had a female vocalist who ended up doing this, you know, meditation as well. And so, but the dialogue was so funny because it's set in a DR world. And so you have this mix of authentic Indian bansuri lines with authentic meditation, but the actual delivery of the lines and the narrative was just kind of ridiculous. So
revitalize. Allow yourself to become one with the world around you. Close your eyes and drink the essence of eternity. Trust yourself. You are the sultan of your own satisfaction.
I'm curious regarding the Christmas music, because, you know, Christmas music is also well known to us, regardless of how we were raised or whatever. It's just so known. And does that make it more fun to come up with arrangements, or does it make it more challenging in some way because we know those tunes so well?
That's a really good question. I think it depends on the delivery. So the opening track, which ended up being The Coldest Time of Year, which was kind of an alternate variation on O Tannenbaum.
Yeah, the Björk one. And totally sounds like Björk.
Yeah, well, that's what we went for, right? So I don't know if you heard O Tannenbaum, the actual one with the crooner.
O Tannenbaum, O Tannenbaum.
We did the kind of more traditional version of O Tannenbaum before with the German lyrics, which was fun. I again worked with Robert Elhai and just said, you know, this is the style I want to do. Can you please do an orchestration of this? And then we massage stuff and found this awesome crooner, Douglas Rogiers, based out of LA, funny enough, the reason I knew about him was when I scored Dead Rising Watchtower, my music supervised that, and one of the tracks that we needed for a segment in it basically had this swing tune, and he was the crooner on it. And so when we were looking for crooners, and he was the first person that I thought of, and sure enough, you know, he sang four or five songs for us. But when we did that one, that was more of a traditional, you're by the fireplace and kind of lush strings, very kind of dense harmonic structure, but very, what's the word? You could really hone in on the voice. Whereas when Bryce Cochran, our executive producer, came to me and said, hey, we need some music for the intro for the game. I said, okay, well, you know, I really think we should take the Tannenbaum and really build like, I have a main theme for DR, and then why don't we take it and I'll kind of incorporate it and make kind of like a Dancer in the Dark Bjork kind of version of it with live strings, but I'll imbue it with my own personal harmonic sort of sensibilities. And so that's basically what that was the coldest time of year was basically that. It was kind of knowing that it would set the stage, that it had to right away get that tingly feeling in your heart of Christmas, right? You know, consumer Christmas, but also have a tinge of like, something's just not, it's supposed to be haunting and beautiful, but something's just not right. And so basically I scored it to picture for the opening game which ended up becoming a trailer as well, but it was originally just the opening credits for the game as well, so.
Okay.
Yeah, it was really just about making sure the charts were written in a way where, you know, you'd get this excitement. I don't know how to explain it, but there's just something about the music from the 30s, 40s, where it was live off the floor, and it was the recording in the moment, and, you know, errors and all, you really sense this live musicians playing it, and it's unwielding, I guess, in a sense, and we definitely, that was a challenge to work with, to record overdubs and vocalists and stuff afterwards, but it had this humanity to it, I guess, this palpable unpredictability to it, which I thought translated quite well.
On the first day of Christmas, my true love sent to me a pie tree and a pear tree. On the second day of Christmas, my true love sent to me two turtle doves and a pie tree and a pear tree.
Talk to me about Frank's music, because Frank is the protagonist. So tell me a little bit about the music you wrote for him.
Well, it's not my first time writing for Frank. I had done Dead Rising 2 off the record where he had come. And so that was kind of a variation on the original Dead Rising 1. In this case, it was a little different because he's older, he's wiser. But I also wanted to melodically and harmonically kind of respect what had happened before, but also what I had done in Dead Rising 2 and Dead Rising 3. So I literally just wrote a main theme that incorporated kind of main notes, and I created a tone row essentially using a mix of all those different Dead Rising 1, Dead Rising 2, Dead Rising 3, and kind of created a new one for Dead Rising 4. Which was a bit more mysterious because he comes back in this case with his camera and needs to uncover a mystery. So I wanted to imbue it a bit more with a bit of a mysterious air to it. And it was in two parts, actually, because the first part... Dun, 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 dun. That's kind of a main melodic fragment that you hear whether it's in action music or mission music or battles, whatnot, whenever Frank is kind of facing off enemies, whatnot. But then there's kind of a chromatic ascending and descending all at the same time thing. It's hard for me to sing it, but it's easier to play. But initially on the game design side, it was much more of a Frank is unlocking a puzzle and there's a mystery and he's unlocking with his camera and all this stuff. So essentially, I kind of used, there was a part A melody. Dun, 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 dun. And then the part B of that was a dun, 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 dun. As you're climbing, you're also descending, and so you don't totally know where you are, but you always come back to the center point, which is your route. And that kind of mirrored the Frank's character as the game went on. Things were getting more intense. And so there's a plumb line that goes through, you know, you have your route that goes through, but essentially his world, as he's discovering things, it's also unraveling at the same time. And musically, it's doing the same thing. You know, you have a creepy variation of it where, you know, I got the string players to essentially play very rubato and very loosely and out of time. So I'd give them that tone row or that main leitmotif and get them to essentially play all together freely at whatever time, quickly as they want, and then do another take with it, doing false harmonics as well, and kind of bridge the gap. And so you kind of get this, the figure is still there, but it's just a variation that kind of takes into a more creepy vein.
You mentioned earlier about the kind of the implementation system, and I'm curious what was unique about that this time around.
Well, in DR3, it was very simple. It was basically an atmospheric drone bed, and then we would kind of bring in a different pulse, and we'd kind of remix the pulses so that and swap them out so that they were never kind of stale. So it kind of felt like a morphing EDM, dirty electro kind of sound, well, consistent soundtrack bed. Whereas here, this was like, you know what? No, we're going to go for the whole... We're going to do atonal orchestra, The Shining, Penderecki, and basically we created the system from scratch using our in-house tools because there was nobody, you know, there's other good middleware, but for what we wanted to do, there was just no way to accomplish it at that time when in development. Because remember, it takes 2 to 3 years to develop a game and, you know, design changes and morphs and stuff. And the only thing we knew is we for sure had zombies, right? And we knew we wanted to take the interactive music system to the next level for ourselves. And so I came up with the initial sketch, essentially, of a music design system. I worked with a colleague of mine, Devin Krauscher, who's awesome, and some coders, Jason Jarvis. And basically, they reverse engineered kind of based on the design I had, but we came up with a system, we called it Maestro. And essentially, what ended up starting off as just kind of like, you know, a couple of cells ended up ballooning into like hundreds of different cells. But the long and short of it is, it's a system where it's highly responsive. It essentially adapts on the next quarter downbeat to the user's input. And it's tracking, I don't know, 30 or 40 different parameters, and the threat that is calculated based on Frank and the type of enemies and the type of zombies that are around him. Are they near? Did they just see him? How long have they, you know, are they within 3 meters, 30 meters? Are they in a passive state or an actively aware state of him? It It's a pretty deep system. We have your base horde zombies, which have like a passive stance. And then as they get more aware of you from a distance, we start playing these kind of atonal lower chugs. So imagine, you know, you have your cellies and they kind of mute their strings and don't really choose a note, but they make like a sound, like almost like a zombie, like, you know. But what's cool about it is we recorded all this stuff on our own with our own string orchestra. And so we were able to dissect all these things into their disparate parts just as, you know, we build them up. And so the system randomly, depending on how many zombies are around or where you're at, it'll start playing those based on a pulse. So like if we were at 121 or whatever the beats per minute and you're nearby, it'd be like drum, drum. Dong, dong, dong. And it will randomly change the meter of the bar from a 4-4 to 11-4 to a 7-4 to a 2-4 based on how many zombies are around you, are they closer to you, what you're doing. And eventually, if more get around you and the threat level goes up, it morphs into like a more consistent thing so that you almost have them playing every quarter downbeat, and then eventually we morph into a pre-made piece. So say we did a 2-minute zombie threat music piece for Horde, kind of which defines high intensity. That would be kind of like your traditional extended technique atonal orchestra playing there, Shostakovich or whatever it would be, like rah, 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 kind of stuff. And then we basically just dissected that into different parts that could transition back down to just the one shots. And we'd swap out, like sometimes it would be low chugs, other times it would be like prepared piano, sometimes it would be other palettes that we'd swap in. And then within the hierarchy of the music system, you'd have your passive horde, your bass horde, as it got more intense, your intense horde. But then there was a new type of zombie that we introduced called the freshly infected. So they just bitten, they're a bit more aggressive, and so we would start playing their music. So it was essentially the higher intensity stuff, but then we would trigger one-shot stabs every 6 bars, 8 bars, 4 bars, kind of a signature stab that would kind of let you know that there was something different about them. And then on top of that, in the hierarchy, there was a brand new Evo zombie that was introduced to DR. And it's kind of like you're very fast. If you don't kill them within 5 seconds, you're dead. And so the difference in music was there was if, you know, if we were at 9, we're now at 11. If we were at 100 and let's just say 103 beats per minute, we're at 144 beats per minute right now.
Oh,
maybe
man.
More polyrhythmic even to make it even crazier. So just imagine, like, I don't want to say dead cats because you have a cat, but imagine literally the sound of, like, think of Hitchcock, the birds, and the birds are picking at your face and the goats are falling through the sky, and, like, you know, it's apocalyptic kind of like sounds. That these are the sounds of the Evos that it should freak you out, right? And so that would be your Evos, and that's kind of the not just dynamic range of volume and density of orchestration, but just the, in order to inform the user's gameplay of the threat, we felt we had to build a system from ground up to support that, use live musicians to record it, just to get the gestures that actually fit. Because a lot of times when you use sample libraries, and we did use sample libraries as well to help give a bit more density to it, but you don't know what you have until you have the animations in front of you. You don't know what's going to work. And so The difference between a footfall of a zombie, even 250 milliseconds, it makes such a difference. You know, that's the difference between 88 beats per minute and 82 beats per minute. And writing a polyrhythmic piece of music just does not feel the same one beat or two beats per minute difference. And you just don't know these things until you lock in. And so it took a lot of trial and error, but we locked in on, say, five or six tempos, and we kind of mapped them out and then built it from there. And then had to populate the world with a bunch of music, right? So we ended up with, I think, I don't know, 40 to 60 minutes of Zombie Threat kind of pre-baked pieces of music. But then we also recorded, I don't know, another hour or 2 hours of just custom stings of all sorts and textures of basically clusters of atonal clusters and different things that were, you know, it was kind of like jazz improv in a sense, except more delineated in a kind of a clear way of like, okay, everybody pick a random note, and we're going to do a short swell, 2 seconds. Ready? Oh, okay, now we're going to do it a little bit longer, 4 seconds, and then now we're going to do the 8th version. Or, okay, everybody pick a random note. We don't want to hear any tone. All we want to hear is the rosin, or we want to hear this. And I'm going to give you like a rhythm, ja, 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 kind of almost like riffage from heavy metal or whatnot. But the difference was you have the palette of live musicians and the air being pushed in a room, which, right. Like I said, you can't replicate that without musicians. It's just not the same.
Well, it's that good old time of year. Good times all around, nothing to fear. Sleigh rides and candy canes and animals and time to play. It's that good old Christmas time of year.
What were some of your favorite songs to write?
What were my favorite songs to write? Hold on, let me take a look here. I can't remember.
There's so many.
Well, of the main stuff, like The Coldest Time of Year, I was really, really proud of. I thought Melissa did an awesome job singing on that too.
Oh, Christmas tree. Oh, Christmas tree.
Actually, I really liked the Frank theme, the Frank mystery theme. That was a lot of fun for me. But all the... Like, I wrote a bunch of originals, right? Oh, Willamette was an original that I wrote.
Oh, Willamette, you ain't seen nothing yet. It feels like Christmas time all through the year.
Oh, Willamette. And it was basically take all the best of classic Christmas tunes that's up-tempo and create something which could theoretically be a song that exists, you know? And Frank Sinatra sings it, and... You have to incorporate a bit of the town of Willamette and a bit of Dead Rising into it. So that was a lot of fun.
Snowmen and reindeer, candy canes and lollipops, holly jolly for everyone. So much snow, I hope it never stops. Oh, Willamette.
Looking for Santa Claus was a hoot because I sang that.
I was going to ask you if you sang on here, because I was just convinced, yes.
If you really want to be happy, and you really want to keep warm, come searching all the chimneys with me, because I'm looking for Santa Claus.
Yeah, I sang a lot, actually. Like, I sang, what else? I sang on, Deck These Halls, I sang on.
Deck the halls with boughs of holly. Tis the season to be jolly.
Which is kind of like a Tony Bennett style kind of, you know, raspy kind of voice thing. But the Looking for Santa Claus, that was my impression of a Louis Armstrong. lost my voice for 3 days after because I had to commit. I had to, you know, you can't, you
right.
have to do it, right? And so that yeah. was a lot of fun.
If you really want to be happy and you really want to keep warm.
Jumping Joe the Jackal was an original, same thing that I wrote with Traz. And it was fun because that one, here's a little bit of an Easter egg. The jackal actually is one of the official animals of Colorado. And we're like, okay, well, what would be a funny kind of Christmas song in Colorado? And so we made up this story about Jumpin' Joe the Jackal, this character who would kind of like, not out of a Ren and Stimpy kind of episode, but just, you know, thinking of in Colorado, it's winter, it's crazy. And honestly, this all the Christmas stuff was just a playground and we just had fun.
I see Jacob and Josh and Joseph and Michael and Tyler too. And I see Alexander, Anthony and Noah from the zoo. But who is that jumping way over the hills? Well, that's our Jumping Joe.
It was fun working with Robert Elhai, the orchestrator, and giving him a piece that I wrote, and then he would arrange it, and then I would tweak it. But then when you actually dealt with the musicians who didn't speak English in this case, you hear their Eastern European take on our, you know, Western kind of music. And so there's this, it's been pretty funny. It's because the sessions, like, you'd be like, you know, we say watermelon, and musically speaking, they'd be like, watermelon, you know, like the just different accents. So that was a lot of fun, just hearing things anew, and we're talking like you know, very quickly anew, because their interpretation wasn't just, you know, slightly different tempo or different groove. It was no, culturally it's a different expression of, like, their whole jazz scene over there, for example, is much different than our jazz scene here. There's some things which are in common, but they have their own sensitivities there. So they have some just phenomenal jazz musicians out there. And we just give them charts and just literally let them do their thing. And then we would come back and Traz and I would do tons of editing and kind of comp together the best of takes. And then we would go and find different singers to sing on top. And then if we needed to, we would go out and get other musicians to do solos on top for the sections where we didn't have enough. So, you know, so it was trombone solos or clarinet solos or trumpet solos or whatnot. One thing I should mention is Braxton Cook. He's just this awesome jazz saxophonist out of New York. Him and his quartet did about 4 or 5 songs also. And it was the same kind of thing, you know, send them a chart, they record the stuff, bring it back. I record whistling or singing on top or other people. Then Robert would arrange some strings. We'd fly those over to Georgia. They would record a bunch of different takes, chop them up, put it back in, do some overdubs. I would mix it or send it out to another mixer, and then kind of that's how you get those Christmas tracks. So DR is an awesome franchise to write music for, so I feel very blessed to be able to actually, it's a playground in a sense. And in this case, it was, you know, I hadn't done big band or extensive jazz combos or ensembles before. I'd always loved it and wanted to do more of it, but I hadn't actually had the opportunity to do it. So this was kind of, I knew we could take the atonal orchestra stuff and really do a great job of that with the adaptive. And I think actually the in-game adaptive music is one of the strongest things of the games. Soundtrack aside, I think just the implementation, what we accomplished there was very strong.
Thank you so much. It was great to talk with you.
Thank you, Emily. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to episode 49 of Level with Emily Reese. One more thing I want to mention about Alexa. In 2004, he wrote such a beautiful chamber piece, and it's called Bright Sadness. It sounds like this. If you haven't heard the whole piece, I encourage you to remedy that surely inadvertent oversight as soon as possible. Again, it's called Bright Sadness, and you can find a link at patreon.com/level or visit Alexa's website at tendershoot.com. Details forthcoming about our Discord chat with Disaster Piece. We'll post that on Patreon and social media soon. I'm Emily Reese. Sam Keenan is our producer. Say hi, Sam. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Level with Emily, and learn more about Sam and me at june-media.com. Remember, June is J-O-O-N.